I started to discover all these layers that I had put on top of me that were not me, but that was a defense against the world. This is what's going to keep me without being touched. You know, I can stay at a distance and you're there and I'm here and we're all good. But then in the process, we get very hurt and we hurt people. And it's because we don't know who we are.
Are you ready to unlock conversations of resilience, triumph, and transformation? Well, you're in the right place. This is the Knocking Doors Down podcast. Your host, Jason LaChance, where we dive deep into the journeys of those who have overcome life's toughest challenges and are sharing their experience, knowledge, and insight into how you can do just the same. If you're checking out the podcast for the first time, hit that subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening on, or hey, if you're on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, leave a thumb up and a comment on the video, because not only do I see it, but so do my guests. As you may or may not know, I'm in long-term recovery for addiction, and I've struggled with some mental health issues. And through that, I became an advocate for sobriety and mental health. As well, I'm a certified recovery coach. And my guest on this episode is Martha Vargas. She's an amazing person. With her proven expertise in personal transformation and a decade of instructing Psych-K, Martha shares how Psych-K not only impacted her life, but that of people that she's worked with for over a decade. It's a non-invasive, interactive approach to changing your subconscious beliefs and self-limiting beliefs and stepping into your own power and getting out of self-sabotage. We discuss a variety of topics that include finding inner peace amidst life's challenges, as well as cultivating authenticity and self-expression. We also discuss mindfulness, imposter syndrome, and so much more on this episode of Knocking Doors Down with Martha Vargas. Martha Vargas, thank you so much for joining me on Knocking Doors Down.
Hey, Jason, thank you for the invitation. Very excited to be here and talk with you today.
Yeah, I wish I was where you are right now talking with you in Ibiza, Spain, but hey, the beautiful part of technology now, right?
We're just a heartbeat away through technology. It's very beautiful.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you, I start my day with gratitude. It's one part of my practice, so I like to start my conversations with three things you're grateful for today.
Well, I think this is what I'm grateful for every day. I'm grateful for with myself for choosing my life as it has been. I am grateful for the ability to choose how to live this life, which is another, I do believe that choice is our great superpower. And I am grateful for choosing the family that I went in, that I came into this planet with.
Oh, I love it. And wow, that last one gave me chills. I too am a believer of that, but I came to that really through, and I know you before you hit record, you had some limited experience with a loved one in 12-step recovery, and it was at that time in which I had a spiritual awakening that I shifted from thinking I was a human that higher power God didn't really have a purpose for, to accepting that I'm a spiritual being having a human experience.
Precisely,
And through that,
which completely changes everything.
But I'm guessing you probably did not always think that way either.
Oh, no. We go from why is this happening to me to how come I need this in my life and why is it happening for me? And that completely changes the focus.
Well, it's those limiting beliefs, right?
Well, I say that we're like little computers. Very powerful computers walking around. We just don't know it. So we're just executing programs that we don't even know are there. And we think that's who we are.
Well, and let me ask you then, what was the process for you? Because I mean, it's for me, the easiest way I can relay it was going from subconscious living to conscious living. And for you,
Exactly.
what was some of those moments that really got you to want to change how your trajectory of life and your outlook changed?
Well, I think we start, maybe a lot of us start unconsciously to search for something that we know it's not there. And I now know, you know, after all these years, I know that that search started when I was five, when my father chooses not to be in this world anymore and just checks out and say, okay, it's too much. And he just takes extra pills. And that was that. And at that moment, well, the adults around tell you so many things. And because we are just subconscious mind at the time, our programs just get installed without us knowing. And I started searching for a level of peace that I couldn't find. And that started by withdrawing from people. So I was very, I was a huge introvert. And then books became my friends. And through books, I found some very interesting things in fantasy and, you know, about the extraterrestrial beings and all that. And with hand in that, then kind of in a natural pace, I think the self-help books show up. And it's like, huh, this all looks very interesting, but how do I get there? So then the workshops start to show up, and gurus and shamans and processes that all add up to who I am today. And then in 2009, I read a book. It's called The Biology of Belief by a very well-known scientist, Bruce Lipton. And Bruce speaks of this process called Psyche at the end of the book, as after he mentions several processes that he knows, and he says that this is the one that completely changed his life. So that's like this little light that turns on and says, huh, so what is this? What am I going to do with this? So I start searching for this, and it turns out that nobody was teaching this in Colombia. Nobody was offering this in Colombia, where I live. And I went to the States, to Philly, to take a basic workshop. And that's when I it's like all the pieces start to come together after reading all the books and going to the workshops and looking outside for peace. The first day of this workshop, when I was going to bed, I was feeling something very odd that I could not place. I could not put a name to that. And it took me some days to realize that that was called peace, which in 44 years I had never truly experienced. And it was mind blowing. It's like, wow, this is what I've been looking for. And then I realized it's not out there. It's by changing my subconscious programming that I am going to be able to keep this in a sustainable way.
Yeah.
Because that was the other thing, you know, from all of the other processes, I kind of felt good for a little bit and then it stopped. And I would see myself going back to the patterns. But here, this stayed and it became to be larger and expansive. And I started to see it in other people. And it's like, okay, this works. I want more of this. So that's how now I consciously choose what programs I do want in my subconscious mind.
Right. Wow. Yeah. And I could, boy, I could, I have a feeling if we were kids around the same time, same place, we would have gotten along really well, because as I shared with you, you know, the traumas I went through, that withdrawal really happened not feeling like you fit in. And definitely the, you know, my search too was very outward. You know, my saying now, my slogan is no outside solutions to inside problems.
I absolutely agree.
And it was that external seeking of validation and not understanding the chemical makeup of the mind and body. My dopamine hits, my endorphins and everything else. And it just, God, yeah, what a journey. Wow. I'm highly fascinated by that. What then did you kind of, I think when we hit a point into what you're talking about is finding that inner peace, we start cultivating authenticity too.
I love that word.
Yeah.
I have a love affair with words. I think words are so filled with so much meaning, and each of us will give those words a meaning. And I think authenticity is one of the most important things that we can strive for, because we don't know how to be that. You know, we're just running old programs, somebody else's programs, cultural programs. So there's no way that we can really be authentic. And I can relate to when I was a teenager saying, I'm never going to be like my mom. You know, we're looking for this identity. And then you're like, oh, I am more and more like my mom every day. And yeah, there's no way that we are not, because we are just running those programs.
Yeah.
And when we have a practical tool where I can say, okay, yeah, I see it. I see the pattern. Which pattern do I want now? What is the program that I do want to run, which is my own program?
Mm.
And how can I be really, truly be and live my essence? And that's what authenticity means to me. It's discovering within us what's already there. There's nothing to build. There's nothing to connect to. We just forgot.
Yeah.
And it's like we're seeing life through so many filters.
Yeah.
And we think that that is reality. You know, I think that we go through, when we start to do a self-discovery journey, like I did many years ago, it was using my conscious mind. So that's what I want to do. And I, you know, I strive to do that a lot. I did the affirmations and the repetition and the positive mind, looking for that authenticity, looking to find who I wanted to be instead of who I was programmed to be. But I didn't know that then. I didn't know anything about beliefs. I didn't know anything about conditioning or programming. I discovered that later on. So trying to be authentic, it's a good goal, and it's hard when you do it only with your conscious mind, only through willpower.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I did a lot of things through willpower, and I admire that in people who are able to quit so many things, you know, and go to recovery like you've done. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And but
Thank
when you
you.
Can invite, yeah, I do. When you can invite a very, very powerful part of you, then we can make it easy and simple and fun and practical.
Mm.
And that's why I love what I do. It's because it's, to me, it's spiritual, pragmatic, day-to-day 3D spirituality.
Yeah.
What drives us, what to me, spirituality is being the most authentic human being I can be.
Wow, I've never heard it put so good. 3D spirit, that, okay, what you said there is really fascinating to me, because I think sometimes spiritually, and even in my own journey, I can think of it, you know, two-dimensionally, be mm-hmm. it the practices of I'm a Christian, so I'd read my Bible or whatever it is, and not thinking, or maybe even almost in a 4D, the reality there's more beyond me. I'm this body that I'm inhabiting now is here for a limited time. I don't get to dictate when or where that will change, as much as at one point in my life, I sure tried. What a fascinating way to think about it. How do you with cultivating your authenticity, did self-expression really come into that? I mean, because you're helping so many people now.
Yeah. When I came into, when Psyche found me, because I do believe that this process finds us when we are ready, knowingly or unknowingly. It just comes in because it requires responsibility. Now, our ability to respond to ourselves and to our actions and the consequences of those actions. And it's just not information. It's actual work that you need to do and that you choose to do. And at the time, because I had done so many things, I was in what I call the spiritual duality. You know, I'm better than you because I have a yoga practice, or I fast, or I've been with the gurus. I can look at you for more soul because you don't do any of these things. There's no spirituality there, you know. It's just so at some point I realized that, and it was from a very strong point of ego, how I was doing things, and I wanted to save humanity. I wanted to save everybody, because everybody, poor things, they were wrong and I was right. And that's when I started to realize that I was a control freak. You know, I had people telling me that. I was so offended when people would tell me that, because they would say, you're just like your mom. I'm like, no, I'm not. So starting to debunk all those behaviors and the attitude behind that arrogance of putting ourselves above everybody else. That is the illusion of separation. That's when we think, oh, I'm here and you're over there, and what happens to you has nothing to do with me. And when you said now there's no outside solutions to inside situations, that's what we do. We need to look inside. Because even if I have a conversation with you and something is triggering me, it's not you. It's my program. And I need to look at the program. Yeah. And that's challenging for a lot of people, because it's like, oh, but it's him, it's her, it's my mom, it's my husband, it's the world that's wrong, and I'm okay. So we're separating all the time. When I talk about this search, the finding more than the search, because I believe that the search is outside and the finding is within. When I start to find answers inside of me and to be brave enough to look at them, because it requires courage, you know, to the strength that comes through the heart, that's the word courage, and to actually put it and sit with my fears and why I was being so arrogant, I started to discover all these layers that I had put on top of me that were not me, but that was a defense against the world. This is what's going to keep me without being touched. You know, I can stay at a distance and you're there and I'm here and we're all good.
Yeah.
But then in the process, we get very hurt and we hurt people.
Yeah.
And it's because we don't know who we are.
Knocking Doors Down by Carlos Vieira. Now available wherever you get audiobooks.
I wasn't done partying, and I didn't want the binge to end. I think I knew that when I finally got home, I'd have to face what I had done, and I wasn't ready to do that. Being responsible for my actions wasn't something I was looking forward to. I had abandoned my wife and baby, my family, and my business. I wanted to avoid the shame of returning to what I had left behind. Even though I was not yet going home, I wasn't sure I had enough resources to continue the binge.
Click the link in the podcast description to find out more.
I mean, tell me your thoughts. And if we don't know who we are, we miss out on some of the greatest joys, and one of those being connectivity. I mean, how can we really connect with with another person on any, you know, especially, I think inherently we all want to connect with others on a deeper level.
Absolutely.
Can we connect? No, some people, it's like, I was having this conversation yesterday.
Unconnectable.
Yeah. They have no access to my life, or their access is simply, hey, good to see you. This weather's been crazy. Or to, you know, my partner and I, very deep connection, very vulnerable in all situations and scenarios. But I didn't even think that was a possibility until I started changing my mind about myself, especially.
Exactly. I think that's what it is. You know, when we make the choice of doing that inner journey, walking that inner journey, then because we are all frequency and vibration, and that's where we talk about reality being co-created. So I'm going to walk my journey within, and there's going to be a program that is sent out like this. You know, somebody's going to listen to this podcast because they like the frequency of what it's being transmitted. Same with people. So we're going to connect from those frequencies. And sometimes the frequencies are very similar, so they will expand. This is science. You know, and sometimes the frequency just cancel each other. And it's like, okay, you're over there and we're going to walk our ways, and that's okay. And I think that connectivity, it's energetic. And it depends on the frequency that we are emitting. And it's also spiritual, because I think we recognize souls. That's my belief. And we connect at that spiritual level, even beyond the personalities, even beyond the programs. And with the journey of life, you know, the day to day, then we start to see the programs. And we start to be challenged by those programs, and to see what's the reason why this person is coming into my life? What's the for in this connection, you know? How are we going to grow together? whether we stay together for a couple of hours or for a lifetime. And then we start to discover that in the interaction.
Yeah, you said something that I didn't want to skip over about triggers, and in that I noticed when I switched and did the work on my victim mentality, it went from they trigger me to, oh, that's my trigger, that owning. And that was a real conscious, it was conscious work that took me to get there, you know, and I'm sure that played out in your life as well.
Oh, absolutely. It still does. I think that is I think it's an ongoing thing, because that's why we keep connecting with people, because it's through the others, when you really realize there's no other, and that they're just, what's the word in English? It's like an exponential mirror. You know, they're just showing you what else can I look inside to transform? Or perhaps sometimes it's already like, okay, I've been there. I am so grateful I'm not there anymore. That's also a beautiful side of the mirror.
I had that recently. You're absolutely right. Yeah. That was the walking past a person, them looking at me and being like, there's not a single word that can make this right. I'm going to keep walking. But I think
it's a beautiful choice.
I think
you don't get triggered anymore.
To a saying, you know, I don't know if you've heard this in another iteration, but we meet people for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And
we never know.
Yes.
You know, which of those is.
Yes.
We don't know. We just got to go and play with this person and whoever it is. You know, I can say I'm going to be in a lifetime with my kids. We don't know. We know they're there today, and I know I'm here today. So let's live this day as passionately or as intensely as we can, because there's no tomorrow. We just really don't know.
Yeah. Well, I found, tell me if you don't mind sharing maybe your experience, that through that programming in my childhood, being able to look back, I'm really fascinated by the relationships, the intimate relationship decisions that I made, and not realizing how much I was trying to solve so many things that had nothing to do with the person in front of me. But there was a lot of trauma bonding, for sure. There was a lot of the similarities, and which at first was like, this is connectivity. And then it ended up being the things that made it so explosively like, this is not good. This is not
really
a connection.
Toxic.
Yeah. It needs to exist anymore.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think that through life, we meet so many people. And when we talk about the partners that we bring into our life, whether it's a love partner or as a work partner or friends, then we all get to learn from each other, but most people don't see it. Most people are the victim, because that's the program that we know. That's the program that we saw in our culture. And, you know, being from Latin America, well, we grew up in a very dramatic culture, and everything gets really big, really fast, you know, like in telenovelas. And, and then you find somebody to make it even more dramatic. You know, you go and talk with this, and that's how we bond. We bond through drama, and it's an addiction.
Agreed.
It's a huge addiction. Drama.
Agreed.
It's huge how addicted we are. We are to drama, to problems, to difficulties, to making life difficult, and then we're proud of it. And that's how we have a way to connect with people. And I was in a workshop a couple of years ago, and we talk about something called secondary gains. Why do I keep a pattern even though I know it's not good for me? Why does it stay even if I'm doing the work? Well, because our subconscious mind is gaining more through that pattern, that it's and it's very, very dangerous to lose it. I was talking to one of my friends, because my participants become my very good friends. They're like family. And one of them comes up and says, Tata, I just realized why I cannot give up drama. The secondary gain is that's how I maintain my friends. if I'm not in the drama, then what are we going to talk about? How do I connect with them when I see them or my family? So it's the possibility of telling the subconscious mind that you can keep that connection by living a peaceful life instead of the old formula that the only way to connect is through drama. Mm-hmm. So it's fascinating how the subconscious mind creates these patterns, because it's gaining this very basic human needs. It's designed to keep us alive, and mm-hmm. connection is, it's a survival way. You know, if it's a very old primitive thing. If I am alone out in the field, then the tiger is going to come and eat me.
Yeah.
When we're in the tribe, then we're protected. So the subconscious mind is always going to protect the connection.
Yeah. Wow.
From whichever way it's getting it.
Yeah. I remember a mind-blowing moment for me in a meeting. A gentleman was doing a share, and he said, you know, I can quit the drink and the drugs, but I just can't quit her. And then he went on to share how that was a thing that, and then I was like, oh my goodness, this person is telling my story and not realizing how much of it wasn't a relationship. It was an addiction to the highs and lows, exactly. The push and the pull. And
exactly.
Me being a
people. The adrenaline within that.
Yeah. And the endorphins and, mm-hmm. and everything, yeah. And being a recovering people pleaser, it was like, oh my God, I just, mm-hmm. I wanted somebody else to give me the identity. I wanted, you know, in a very just, I don't want to say sick, but unhealthy way. That when that ended, it was like, I don't know who I am. I don't know where I am. The way that it seems friendships are, I became the fun guy. Let's call him. He'll be fun.
And
it was getting so tired that I could feel my soul was just like, no more. I can't take this anymore. Like it literally, you know, I remember having an internal dialogue of like, I am going to lose that valuable part of me, and it's never going to come back. And it's going to be a slow death from here.
And it's very scary.
Yeah.
It's very threatening.
Yeah, it was.
Because that addiction is so, so strong for all the things that you're receiving from that. And those are the things that are so subtle and at the same time so powerful that need to be not only understood, but how do we tell the subconscious mind a different formula so that it doesn't go back to that, or it doesn't take so much energy from us to, you know, to keep it up through just willpower?
Yeah. Oh, and willpower doesn't work. Trust me, I was a chronic relapser, and that was trying to do it on willpower alone, white knuckle.
Exactly.
But what, maybe if I was someone and I came to you, what is some of that work, the early work you might do to help adjust the subconscious mind to being more conscious?
Mm-hmm. And it's very, I love what we do because it's so elegantly simple. And because I was addicted to complication, I had a very complicated mind. You know, I loved it because that was my game. The more complicated, the more intelligent I needed to be or show that I was. But realizing that this is a very, very simple thing, as simple as an 8-year-old can do, because I've had 8-year-olds in my workshops, because all you need to do is you decide, this is the situation where I'm right now. You know, this is my current point of state that I'm not satisfied with. And then we decide with our conscious mind, I want to go here. Right. So I am addicted to problems. I want to be fascinated by simplicity, for example, you know, and from there, anything. I can't find my keys. I want to find my keys. It can be as huge as a spiritual situation or a day-to-day thing. And then we just follow 7 steps or 9 steps that we learn in the workshops. But behind those steps, it's a very advanced spiritual technology happening, which brings both our hemispheres to work together, which is called the whole brain state. That happens in an instant. And then in a very few seconds or very few minutes, the subconscious mind reads files within us. We're just made of files, programs. So it reads the programs and reprograms what's been limiting us to the new goal. And we do all this through something called muscle testing, so that we can see what the subconscious muscle testing shows us, what's in the system and what is not in the system. If it's in the system, then we find something else to do. If it's not in the system, then we do what is called the psyche balance. And before the balance, we see what is not. After the few minutes, we test and it's there now. And then the person can go and take some actions, because we need to go and act and create through the conscious mind new behaviors. But the new behaviors are now going to be driven by the subconscious mind, which is like a very powerful train, instead of trying through willpower, which is like going to the goal in a bicycle with the powerful train looking the other way. Mm-hmm. That's why it's like, I want to, you know, I have this conscious drive to do something, but it feels like there's a very powerful brake. With psyche, we're taking the brake off and allowing the bicycle to go. That's our conscious mind. That's where I want to go. And that huge power of the fastest train on earth to accompany you there in a very comfortable, fun, and easy way, instead of being so proud of doing things through effort.
Mm. Fascinating.
So it's very, very simple. And it's not just what we do there, because after we do a balance, the subconscious mind keeps rewiring our neurological paths of how we think, and it's ongoing. And this makes it also sustainable over time, which is what fascinated me when I took the basic workshop. Oh, but this is not going away. You know, this feeling of well-being, of peace, very powerful, and I can still feel it, even in the midst of an apparent chaotic time.
Mm.
I have that inner peace, and I have a practical tool to get through what I call chaos apparent, because it's just temporary. it's a little time that brings more awareness,
yeah,
and more reprogramming that we can do with this practical tool.
Have you dug into the archives of past Knocking Doors Down podcast episodes? The Knocking Doors Down podcast archive is available to you for free. Check it out. Here's a snippet from when Charlie Sheen was on the podcast.
AA is not the best place for a famous atheist. I kept looking for that fucking chapter. What, you know? So yeah, but it's not a one size fits all.
Sure,
you know, it's like saying that we all think the same, like our brains are built the same. They're just not.
Right. Yeah.
There's such uniqueness involved.
Check out this episode and so many more in the Knocking Doors Down archive. And while you're at it, hit that subscribe button, give this video a thumb up, leave a comment, and share with somebody else that you know will get value out of the Knocking Doors Down podcast.
When you sit down with people, helping them understand that so many of these thoughts, feelings that we have are so momentary, because I know they can, as a person, and I still have it at times, of course, I'm a human and having a human experience with a human brain that's, you know, technology that's thousands of years old, that I can be in a feeling and in a moment. And I am conscious now that this too shall pass. But that's a hard point to come to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It is. Because it's like being in the middle of a hurricane. You don't know when the hurricane is going to be over.
Mm.
And I think that's part of the conscious journey, you know, the conscious journey to consciousness. How do I choose to go through that process? And I think this is when, instead of this being just self-help, you know, how do I help myself? This is, how do I actually know, not learned, I know that I am a spiritual being having a temporary human experience. Mm. And that within that temporary human experience, I go through temporary difficulties. And I think that's a realization that each person is going to find in their own rhythm. Mm. I can say that to somebody 100 times, that until they really experience for themselves, and they're going to say, ah, now I understand what you were trying to tell me. And that happens with everything, you know. We can talk somebody for hours, that if they're not ready within for that personal realization, it's just not going to happen.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and I had a great conversation on here with a friend of mine, an extraordinary lady, and we really got into one of the biggest factors. She works a lot with people in recovery and kind of supercharging their recovery, and I do on a limited basis. And we were really discussing discernment and that importance of being able to discern between certain situations, people, emotions, what experience are you having? And I think that's a really, for me, was one of those huge things of trying to have a life where I'm more conscious and more present, that discernment was a huge challenge.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we all arrive, if we choose to start looking within, then we will arrive to that discernment also in different ways and in different rhythms. And I think one of the biggest things for me have been respecting that rhythm, because being a control freak, I wanted everybody to go through things in the same way that I did. And it doesn't happen. And then we suffer through that. Why can't you see it? It's right there. Oh, it's the same thing that if somebody comes and tells you, you know, like when they told me, you're just like your mom. No, I'm not. Because it's so subconscious that you just can't see it until you do. And then you can't unsee it.
Yeah. Well, I think the challenge of where... Yeah. Yeah, I've had people be like, well, I just want to look at myself objectively. And I'm like, I don't think you can totally. Like, I don't know how you could, because we've all had, one of the things that I took away from doing some work in the sex and love addiction area that was really brilliant, a friend of mine, Breanne Davis, dropped on me, is your greatest soulmate is the person in the mirror. Like, we're the only one that's going to know all of our experiences in every manifestation of being a living entity.
Yeah. And, you know, I was very well trained by my mother, because she was a very strong, bright mind, very in control of her life. You know, she had to provide for us since I was 5 and she was 34 years old. So I was trained by her to do life on my own, which I deeply appreciate. But that had a dark side to that, is, oh, I have to do everything on my own. And that becomes also exhausting, because then you don't allow anybody in, because they can't see that you're fragile. It's like a big sin to allow people to see that you're fragile. And it's very important to allow others to be of support. And that's also been a huge gift for myself, is saying, you know, I know how to do my work, but right now I'm stuck and I need this external person to ask me questions, not to give me answers, to ask me the questions that I haven't asked myself, or to ask me the questions from a place of loving neutrality that is going to allow me to make visible the invisible. And that is, in Psyche, we call that the sumatak, which is a concept coming from the Inuit in Northern Canada. And it's being... having the ability to create a sacred space where wisdom is revealed. So if I'm going to do Psyche with you, we create that space just by intention, where through questions, you're going to find your answers. Your answers are in your wisdom. I don't have your answers. You have them. And that took a lot of humility on my side, to get down from, I can do everything on my own, to, yes, I know I can. And I'm going to allow somebody to be of support and ask for that support.
Yeah. Oh, that's so hard. And I think, you know, I can really resonate with you on the level of when we have things that happen to us, especially in our childhood. I mean, everybody's going to experience trauma on some levels. Some of them are,
absolutely,
as we'll say, the big T, you know, you losing your father, things that I went through, or whatever it is, or the small T's. And we really develop a way of being to survive and to go through. And like, that's such a huge part of being able to let go of these things that no longer serve us. But
exactly.
But for me, and I'm still identifying, I'm still doing the work, and I'm sure I always Good. Will. But that we really have to come to. It's kind of like, I don't know if anybody's raised a dog. You do some things when it's a puppy. Then as it gets older, the training kind of changes up a bit.
Exactly.
And we're no different.
Yeah. And I think this is a very important point that you're making, Jason, because that's why we need to understand that life is a process. Mm. It's not like, oh, I need to find the little magic wand that is going to make it all good for tomorrow. And then everything's always going to be good. And I'm surprised when I see things on, you know, social media or ads that come up saying, this is the answer and we're going to solve all your problems. The moment somebody tells you that they are going to solve your problem, oh, I run very fast the other way. Because that's very disempowering.
Mm-hmm.
And when we tell people, well, this is not the magic wand, it's a very good process, but you need to do your work. You need to walk within, and it's an ongoing walk. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take different timing for different people. And the more that we accept that journey, it's so beautiful, you know, because then there's no longer a need for a destination.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we were talking about traveling earlier, and to me, travel nowadays is more of a journey than where am I going to go and what things I'm going to do there. You know, I was such a planner, and I realized I was planning out of fear because it was a control thing. Now I plan just to kind of have an idea, but then that plan is completely adaptable. And that's how life gets easier.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't do well with itineraries anymore of like, we will be here at this time and this thing. It's like, look, we're going to show up. We heard there's this great museum. There's these places to go to lunch, you know, whatever it is. Like I can't live in that anymore. It's maddening for me. You know, I have my rituals and routines. Don't get me wrong. I think they're so imperative for me as I continue to learn and refine them. But beyond that, I can't do it. It's a maddening mindset for me, you know, because I'm not even enjoying. Yeah. I'm looking at the clock like, oh, no, we said lunch at 11:30. It's now 10:45. We're going to have to leave this thing. And it's like, no, just like enjoy.
Yeah. But for other people, the whole situation would not be enjoyable if it weren't for the itinerary. Uh-huh. You know, it would be maddening for them. So learning to see those differences, I think, makes all these different colors that we each bring into life are so beautiful.
Yeah. The nuances.
The diversity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you dealt with anyone that you've worked with where they... I think it's an interesting concept. The imposter syndrome is oftentimes what people call it. Whereas for me, when I was saying that, I had a mentor, this great gentleman, Mike Diamond, who was like, it's not that you think you're an imposter. It's that you don't think you're deserving. And that your experience and knowledge isn't worthy to share and to pass on.
Yeah, I've looked a lot into that because I really believe, as you know, I've been teaching this process for 15 years and I've done hundreds of thousands of sessions with myself and with others. And actually, when I look at myself, I think we all have a layer of that, an aspect of the imposter syndrome, because it shows up in so many different ways. And just what's subjacent is there's no self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how to value ourselves. We weren't programmed for that. All the time we were being devalued. We were not worthy enough. This is the culture of you need to, we're not deserving, like you said. You know, we need to earn and make everything with effort. If it doesn't come with effort, it's not worthy. So the imposter syndrome shows up in so many aspects of our life. The fear that somebody's going to discover that I'm not good enough. So I need to overdo. And that was me. You know, I was the overachiever, doing all the time. If I'm not doing, somebody's going to find out that I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very scary. Yeah, because when I came into the psyche world, I, like I said earlier, I was so arrogant. And then I discovered that that arrogance was part of the imposter syndrome. It was a very strong defense, you know, a mask. So nobody could see beyond that my fragility. And it's better to show yourself like you're very big, you know, like the bear. You need to be very big and very loud. And we can do that in different ways, even being very quiet, which was me. And accepting that there was a total absence of self-esteem within me was probably one of the hardest things to do and one of the most powerful and transformational moments of starting to build that. Because I don't think that right now it's complete. It's ongoing. I still find layers of this. I still find moments where I feel intimidated or small, or oh, somebody's going to say, I'm not good enough. I'm not doing enough. What I do is not good enough. And it's less present, but it shows up and it's like, ah, there you are. Okay. let's look at you now. What is it? What's coming up?
Yeah. I find for me that it's, that in situations I have to, my brain did a really good job. Let's say I'm speaking in front of 100 people and there's one that goes, I got nothing out of that. That was actually absolutely terrible. Whereas all the other 99 can go, wow, thank you. I took something away from that. You gave me some things to think on, to work on, tools, whatever you want to call it. And it would be that focus on the one because of my limiting beliefs to come back full circle and the story I was attached to about myself that I told myself. And I was looking for that justification of, see, that one guy out of the 100. And it's like, it goes back to the control issue and people pleaser. It's what people pleasing is a control issue. Own that, people. It's, you know, of going, oh, see, all that story I had about myself that was implanted in me way back when, it's true. That, what's the point? I might as well just give up.
Yeah. And I think that we, when we see it, and with a practical tool, like what, which is why I stayed with Psyche and I said, I'm not going to look for anything else. This is it. You know, I've never seen anything so simple and so practical and so effective and sustainable. It's, I have that possibility to see those moments and ask myself, and what do I want instead? How do I want to experience this instead of what's coming up? And I have a practical way to transform that. So it's not just like, okay, I see you, and now I have to try to change it. No, it's now I can reprogram another part of this huge database, because that's all that it is. You know, we've just put so much information from 0 to 7 years old that we're not aware of. So those programs are going to come up somehow, and they're going to show themselves. And depending on our level of discernment and awareness and where we are in the journey, we may see them. What I see is that most people are never going to see them, because it's just normal. We've normalized all that drama. We've normalized all those situations. That's how it is. And that's how life is going to go. So let it be. And there's a percentage of people growing, thankful for that, more and more saying there's got to be a better way to be better at being human.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's why I think both of us do what we do, is to serve more of those who are ready.
Yeah.
Say, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
And there's so many ways. Yeah. And you have yours and I have mine, and we're just here to make them visible. If we can inspire one person to say, oh, that's the key, then it's worth it.
Yeah. And we've been gifted a purpose within humanity.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's, again, my love affair with words, purpose and happiness. I think those are two words that are way overused. And people are so frustrated by how social media are using, oh, you got to find your purpose. Like, well, how about if the only purpose is that you are just good at doing life, you know?
Yeah.
Just get better at the game of life. That's it. Whether you are cleaning the streets or you're a very high-level CEO, be the best human being you can be doing that.
Yeah.
And put a signature to that at the end of the day. That's the purpose to me. You know,
yeah.
That's what we are here for. Great Spirit says, I'm going to take human form, and it takes form of Martha Vargas. So what am I going to do to honor that gift?
Yeah.
And that to me is the joy of living. So the end result is not some happiness that's going to come from doing. It's the joy of being in every instant.
Ooh. I don't know if you see it. I got chills. I think the tattoo's hiding it there. Oh, and you're right. I think I agree with you. I think some people maybe hear that word and think that it's such a daunting thing, and it could be. Mm-hmm. I try to strive for the simpler things. Of earlier today, when I got my cup of coffee before we got here, because the weather sucks and my sinuses are, you know, I didn't want to sound terrible for you. Holding the door for a person that had a couple things in their arm and letting them go
exactly.
through first, the simple things of humanity.
So
and I think people can make it, and I'm guilty of it. Maybe it's the high achiever brain, or you know, the creativity part of me up there, that it has to be some grandiose thing, and it doesn't. I mean, maybe being a good person was getting up, making my bed, and brushing my teeth. I don't know.
Yeah.
So
I think it's just choice, because again, I believe that choice is our superpower.
Mm.
Whether we do something, it's a choice. If you don't do it, it's also a choice. We just don't see how many hundreds of choices we make a day. And if I can choose to stop and open the door for somebody, or you know, somebody is missing a quarter to finish to pay for their coffee, then why not? You know, I have it. Why not? You're just going to make their life better. Or, you know, in Colombia, it's like, okay, I'm going to, instead of giving somebody money, I'm going to give them coffee and bread. And it just made somebody's life better that day by something so simple. Or, you know, we were walking with my daughter the other day on the street, and there was a can in the sidewalk, on the sidewalk. So I can just walk by and not pick it up, or I can pick it up and put it in the garbage. And then the world is it's a better place just for that action.
Yeah.
Little tiny things
yeah.
that make life better.
Well, it's the butterfly effect, one little action, mm-hmm. and how it can cause the ripple.
Yeah.
I mean, as a person made a lot of disempowering decisions, trust me, that ripple effect can be really strong. So,
yeah. And I think things like this, what you're doing and offering different points of view to people, actually do change people's lives. And sometimes we don't know. You know, I did a short live video one day on an airport, and I was saying, I talk a lot about the world. What if not? That's our program. What if this goes wrong? What if somebody says no? What if this doesn't work out? And my invitation is, let's move to the world of what if yes. What if it does work out? What if you do find somebody amazing? What if people find you amazing? What if you try and do this and it works out wonderful? You know, it's a more expansive way. And then I met the lady who helps me with my nails in Colombia, and she said, I listened to your video. And that day I made the choice of going to learning how to drive a car. Completely changes her outlook of herself. You know, because she was so afraid of that. And just because I said, what if yes, then she went and tried, yeah, what if I can? What if I can do this? And she started. And it was such a heartwarming moment. You know, it's those little things that keep you walking this and talking, walking our talk and doing what we do, because we know that we made one person's life better.
Yeah, I love it. Martha, we're going to jump into some fun, random questions, and I'm going to have you leave us with some final thoughts. But first, if people want to connect with you, what's your preferred way?
Okay, because we are doing this and we do this all over the world, the preferred way will be to go to the Psyche website, which is psyche.com, and I can send the link later on. I have my personal website with my name, .org, martavargas.org, but that's in Spanish. And in psyche.com, you can find everything in English. And we can also share the book that I wrote, which is in both languages, which is a very good way to understand how to integrate this into whoever is ready to integrate psyche in their lives.
Mm, excellent. Yeah, we'll get all those links there in the description so people can connect with you. I'm going to stay connected with you. I'm going to be reaching out. I'm going to be picking your brain. So
awesome.
This won't be the last you hear from me. Okay, here's some fun random questions. I was going to start with one about superpower, but you already said what it is, so I'm going to skip that. But
I have a second one.
Okay, all right. What's the second? If you could have one superpower, what would it be? What's the second one?
Vulnerability.
It's very underrated.
Oh yeah. And it's scary to a lot of people because it's equal to fragility or to opening up yourself to somebody harming you. And to me, it's completely opposite. It's going out there and living life fully. And, you know, like living life without protection. Because when we live protected, we're at war always. So when we take those protections down, it's like, okay, yeah, life is good and it's going to be awesome and I'm going to find some cool things. And when I don't, when things kind of get rough and shaky, then I have my resources to get through that too. And that makes me resilient and stronger.
Yeah. Well, as you said, you love words. Vulnerability is so interesting because it takes such strength to live vulnerably. And it's that dichotomy of words. It's like, how do those, they go completely hand in hand.
Completely hand in hand. And when you re-signify that, then you have the ability to be intimate with yourself and with others. Without vulnerability, there's no intimacy.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, these are random questions, so they're supposed to be quick. Do you have an interest or a hobby that might surprise people to learn?
Well, I played golf since I'm 10. It was love at first swing, and I played golf for representing my country, and that's what took me to study in the States with a scholarship of all places in Brigham Young with the Mormons, which was very interesting. I was raised Catholic, so that was a fun way to look into my relationship with God. And I actually did rebuild it through a very fun conversation while we were partying and breaking all the Mormon rules.
Wow. What a journey. If I had known that, we're going to have to do a follow-up bonus episode on that journey alone. I am fascinated by that. Wow.
Yeah,
what a dichotomy of life. Oh, I love it. I love it. What got you into golf?
Oh, that's also a fun story. My dad, before he died, they had bought a membership to a club that was going to start being built. And when I was around 10, maybe 11-ish, the club opened. And my mom said, okay, you guys go and take some tennis lessons. And on the second tennis lesson, a tennis ball landed on my nose. And I said, nope, this is not what I want. So I went to look for mom. And she was starting to take some golf lessons. And she said, do you want to try this? I said, yeah. And that was it. It was just fall in love with golf for so many years. I still play. But now I'm not competitive. It's just meditation.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome. Yeah, my son, he got into it, so I had to pick up some clubs again, and it had been a long time. And it shows. And it shows.
Yeah.
Okay, I always enjoy this one. If you were stranded on a deserted island and you had one movie, one music artist's greatest hits, and I'm going to throw this in, you're the first time I'm throwing this in, and one book, what would they be?
Okay. One movie. Can it be a series of movies? Can it be Harry Potter?
Sure. We'll go Harry Potter. All right. Okay. All eight of them, right? There's eight, I think. Something.
Yeah.
Okay.
What artist?
Yeah, one music artist's greatest hits, a band or an artist themselves.
Coldplay.
Okay.
Okay. Saw them in concert last year. Amazing. It's hard. I've read so many books. You know, books were my best friends. I would go with a book that I haven't read in a long time. It's by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, 100 Years of Solitude.
Interesting. I'll have to write that down and look that up. I'll remember it when I go back through this. Okay, one last one here. Oh, this is always fun. So let's say your story is licensed to be a movie or a TV show. Is there an actress you would want to play adult you?
What's her name in La La Land?
Emma Watson.
Stone. Alan. Emma Watson. Yes.
Okay.
yeah, there's have you two seen of her them, latest right? movie?
No.
Oh my God. Poor Things. Wow.
Powerful.
Emma Watson.
Huh? Okay.
Emma, what? Is I have my daughter here correcting me. That's her. Whatever. Her in La La Land. I think she was in Nathan.
Okay.
Emma Stone. That's
Emma
her
Stone?
Name. Emma Stone.
So I did have it right. Okay. All right.
Yeah, you had it right.
All right.
I think she's very charismatic.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Well, Martha, this is where I like to give you the floor, the final thoughts, anything that you would want to lend to anyone out there, be it advice or whatever, your choice.
Well, there's two things which I always offer to people is first, when you wake up in the morning, ask your inner wisdom, whatever you call it. It can be spirit, intuition, or like a guy said, my inner CEO. Ask a word of how you choose to live that day. And then go and live it in that way. And then at the end of the day, because we've been so programmed to focus in what we don't do right, just make a short list, three little small victories of that day, you know, that you think that you did good, that you made the world better by doing three little things, like you said today, opening the door for somebody or smiling at somebody who might need it or just picking up a paper on the street. It just makes choose to make the world better by your presence in it. And then congratulate yourself for doing so.
Martha, thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure.
And likewise, Jason. Thank you. Yeah, we're going to have to do another one.
Absolutely. Deal. Well, on that note, remember, no outside solutions to inside problems, and keep knocking doors down.